Hello everyone, my name is Ahmed Abdullah and I'm the CEO of Digifarm. My background by trade is as a health economist, initially supporting the National Health Service in the UK decide what high-cost therapies they could pay for with their limited budget, and then moving into the pharmaceutical industry and helping pharmaceutical organizations gain access with various healthcare technologies into global markets. Today, I'm going to be talking about pioneering new business models with value-based healthcare and where technologies like blockchain can come into that. And so to lay the groundwork for this discussion or talk today, let's reflect on the current state of healthcare. The United States spends nearly 20% of its GDP on healthcare, around or over $4 trillion annually. To put that into perspective, that's over $12,000 per person per year. And this expenditure far outpaces other high-income nations. Yet the US consistently ranks poorly on health outcomes, with lower life expectancies, high mortality rates, and chronic disease rates compared to peer countries, especially developed Western economies. And clearly there are deep systemic issues within the US healthcare system. But the US is not alone. Costs continue to skyrocket within healthcare while amplifying disparities in access and outcomes. And much of this traces back to the long-standing fee-for-service model we've seen in healthcare. This is where providers are based on volume of services and procedures performed rather than overall value delivered. And fee-for-service is not just, based on service provision. It's also for the actual purchasing of healthcare technologies, whether it's drugs, devices, and equipment. And this misalignment incentivizes providers and manufacturers to maximize services and maximize sales and revenues over what is often clinically necessary or cost effective or most beneficial to health systems. Fee-for-service approaches also disincentivize coordination between different care settings. It essentially doesn't incentivize healthcare stakeholders to work together to get the best possible outcome. And the result is extraordinary waste and inefficiency. And you're looking at a potential 25 to 35% of overspend that can be saved. This could be due to duplicative tests, avoided readmissions, unnecessary procedures, and wasted costs when treatments are provided and they don't provide value to the beneficiary, which is the patient. And patients get caught up in a fragmented, expensive system that doesn't adequately reward improving health. So against this backdrop, value-based healthcare has gained significant momentum as a better model for healthcare delivery and financing. But before we dive into value-based healthcare, let's ground ourselves in a few economic theories that are foundational to understanding this concept. First is the theory of value itself. Value refers to the quality of outcomes achieved, relative to the costs incurred. Maximizing value means getting the best outcomes at the lowest costs. In healthcare, outcomes refer to measures like clinical results, functionality, and quality of life. Costs include factors like price of technologies, the prices of services, overheads, and more, really. So value theory contends that incentivizing providers around value will bend cost curves while improving access to high quality care. It brings market principles like competition and consumer choice and consumer preference into healthcare delivery to drive value. Next is really the principal agent theory. This example is how in this ex well examines how interests between two parties can be misaligned in a transaction. In healthcare, fee-for-service creates a principal agent problem between providers and patients. Providers are incentivized to increase services because they're going to get more revenue, rather than prioritizing the actual needs of the patient. And value-based healthcare is one of the key ways to try and realign these interests. And another one is the economies of scale, where consolidation and specialization allow reduced costs per unit. Centralizing care delivery for specific conditions enables optimized care processes and multidisciplinary expertise. And we'll see examples of this later with centers of excellence. But now that we have the economic theory background of it, let's discuss the history and definitions of value-based care models. The concept of value-based reimbursement first emerged in the late 1990s from Harvard researchers, actually, who made the business case for aligning payments with value. And this means structuring reimbursements or payments around outcomes rather than the volume of services performed. And really taking examples from other industries. Let's take a very simple example. When you go to a visit a mechanic and he tries to fix your car, and if they can't fix your vehicle, they typically won't be expected to pay for that repair. Whereas in healthcare, we have that type of approach. So value-based healthcare aims to improve the patient experience along with population health while reducing unnecessary costs. And it does so by shifting financial incentives, sharing risk away from being fully on the patient, and increasing accountability to providers. And rather than healthcare providers or manufacturers being paid for each test or procedure or healthcare technology that they part with, compensation is then tied to the overall health of patients. And there are a few types of value-based reimbursement models. One of them is capitation. So providers receive a set payment per patient for all the care services needed. And providers take on the financial risk of keeping patients healthy while managing costs. Bundled payments can cover an entire episode of care for all services needed for a health condition. And payments are premised on expected costs for clinically defined episodes. Providers take on the risk for keeping costs below the bundled rate. And for bundled payments, there can be bonuses or penalties as well around these payment bundles. In shared savings arrangements as well, providers can share in a percentage of the net savings achieved through improved quality and efficiency versus a historical benchmark, for example. And payers and providers align around the goals of reducing wasted spend while improving standards, essentially. And an example of, for example, bundled payments, which is becoming quite popular, could be around, diabetes. Payers would pay for healthcare organizations to maintain, HbA1c levels below a specific threshold. And then it's up to the providers to do what they can, provide whatever services they want to provide to maintain the patient health state below that specific threshold, especially that blood sugar level. And this, incentivizes the providers to try and use the best and most efficient methodologies to provide this care. And within some of these models are further variations. You also have accountable care organizations where you have a group of providers to coordinate care for a defined population under specific payment arrangements. And providers take accountability for the total costs and outcomes, and they're then paid based on specific target thresholds or KPIs. And we see this in the majority of large majority of developed health systems, especially if you have a national healthcare fund that then covers trusts or organizations within a region to provide coverage for citizens. So now we have, a grasp of value-based care principles and models. Let's look at some real-world examples. A prominent example of value-based healthcare in action in the US is the alternative quality contract developed in Massachusetts. This applied a budget capitation model with incentives for quality. And health outcomes actually improved significantly, while costs were 16% below the state average. The CMS Innovation Center has piloted a range of value-based programs within Medicare, and accountable care organizations have yielded $4 billion in savings in under a decade, along with higher quality care. Bundled payments for procedures like joint replacements have also demonstrated reduced expenditures. We see private insurers like Aetna have also partnered directly with providers on value-based contracts. And the partnerships improved outcomes for conditions like diabetes while lowering costs, around 15 to 20%. And some of this has actually included, pay-for-performance procurement models on pharmaceuticals. And that's an area that is, I think, is going to be increasing in the future. Kaiser Permanente is another pioneer, really integrating insurance and care delivery around capitation models. They've been able to consistently deliver high quality care at 10 to 15% below industry average costs. Looking beyond the US, European nations like Sweden and Germany have elements of global capitation budgets in their universal coverage models, and their per capita costs are 40 to 60% below that in the USA, while delivering much better health population outcomes. So this suggests that the US has much room for improvement. However, we do need to take account the increased amount of let's say healthcare, well, let's say stakeholders that are involved in the healthcare reimbursement process that we don't have in Europe and the rest of the world. But value-based healthcare alone can provide that significant improvement that we all want to see. So now let's examine value-based procurement and value-based contracting. So healthcare systems are leveraging their purchasing power to obtain better value via flexible performance-based contracts. Value-based procurement focuses on optimizing specific high-cost spend for specific conditions, and really focus on the actual purchasing aspect, and not just looking at the very idealistic approach to value-based healthcare, which is focusing on long-term improvements on quality of life. There are very much situations where healthcare organizations can save money almost immediately at considerable levels in purchasing, whether it's drugs, devices, equipment, or their outsourcing services, and linking this directly to performance. So this could be for high-cost pharmaceuticals in oncology or Crohn's disease, and linking the pricing of these technologies to clinical outcomes, measuring that and setting up an agreement with manufacturers in this way. An example of what can be done for equipment could be, for example, hospital beds and mattresses linked to the occurrence of pressure ulcers. You can have contracts even with cleaning services within the hospital and linking those to, the rate of hospital-borne infections. And, with prices adjusted based on, actual real-world outcomes. And this creates incentives for, manufacturers and suppliers to actually try and provide the best possible products, because then they get, they get the access to these markets, and they actually capture these contracts. And at the same time, it ensures that healthcare organizations and health systems are getting the best possible services and best bang for their buck, essentially. So what we also have is In pharmaceuticals, outcomes-based contracts, as I mentioned, that links drugs to real-world effectiveness. However, with this, there are specific mechanisms or requirements that need to be taken into account. And from country to country, the way these, let's say, contracts are structured, they have to differ slightly. In some countries, you can't just have pricing tiers or discounts due to reference pricing requirements or regional requirements. In some situations, let's say pharmaceutical companies or manufacturers need to provide replacement vials or free doses as replacements rather than working on a pricing structure. However, the theory behind it is the same. Whenever a patient has, let's say, a serious adverse event, typically grade three and above, or the patient outcome, in terms of clinical outcome, hasn't been great, then there's some sort of rebate or discount, or if there's some sort of patient does not tolerate this treatment, then again, they'll replace the vial or they'll do some sort of discount or the hospital doesn't pay at all. So there's many ways to actually structure it, but it's all about restructuring the way, payments are made to look at outcomes and value rather than quality. So if we talk about now, the technology that can help us do this, there are several emerging technologies that can act as pivotal enablers for value-based healthcare models. And one of them is, one of the key focuses of this COM2X, event and conference, and that's blockchain. And blockchain's a cryptographically secure distributed ledger that can support things like value-based contracting between healthcare organization as a trusted single vision of the truth around data quality and auditing and interactions with this data that informs value-based healthcare procurement essentially making sure that the data that some of these value decisions are made is trustworthy and hasn't been tampered with. And then we also have smart contracting, which can enable automated incentive distributions and tracking of performances. We have predictive analytics as well to look at large data sets to identify patients or groups at risk of deteriorations or complications, or to understand and identify who would respond well to specific therapies to then make sure that as a provider, or even as a manufacturer who's selling into a specific market, that you have a patient group that you are targeting that you know will work or benefit from, receiving these therapies, and there is much less risk of actually, losing out on potential revenue streams by targeting patients that won't benefit much from what you're providing. Other technologies that are also interesting are now, clinical decision support tools that can support physicians with personalized guidance or diagnostics to optimize care provision. And again, this is something that manufacturers and service providers can use to make sure that the markets and the patient groups they are targeting are going to be responders. So again, it's not just about the providers targeting and generating savings and optimizing value. It's also about access strategies for some of these manufacturers or vendors or service providers. So if we now look at innovative care delivery models and how this can improve value within healthcare. A really interesting approach that we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years is looking at centers of excellence. And centers of excellence really consolidate care for specific conditions under one roof to try and drive consistent execution and best practices, and where specialized teams fine-tune processes to minimize errors and variance. And this is where patients can benefit from coordinated expertise, by focusing on narrow conditions. Centers of excellence really help achieve economies of scales, but also improve outcomes. And early implementations have shown, quite tremendous results. MD Anderson's Proton Therapy Center has 10-year survival rates, up to 20% higher than peers for prostate cancer. You have Getzinger's proven care centers with reduced readmission rates by 15%, and length of stay by 10% for cardiac surgeries. And you have other programs for different types of surgeries that can show faster recovery, fewer complications, and dramatically lower revisions. So this is really interesting. By focusing on value and focusing on improved outcomes, these organizations have actually shown that, the spend per patient can actually be reduced, and outcomes can actually be improved. So that's a really interesting way of doing things. We also see that population health management is another value-based model gaining tractions. And this is where providers have used advanced data analytics to segment patients into risk-based groups, and different intervention packages can then be defined and targeted to patients based on need. And so this is something that I think has been really, really intriguing, actually. Some patients require different interventions, and it also helps you focus on healthcare inequalities for patients with different let's say demographic or socio economic backgrounds. Some require outreach and education at earlier stages of disease or to prevent disease. It's all about proactively addressing some of the needs of different healthcare populations to try and lower costs over time. And typically, you're going to need to, provide some sort of combination of all of these things to get to a more optimized spend for health systems. Other things as well that are all interesting are also some of these early health intervention programs have reduced emergency healthcare visits and hospitalizations. And for large populations like we see in the US, this can, yield millions in savings from averted acute care and improving outcomes. The main thing is that anything that's done within healthcare from now on is focused on value and all about incentivizing value, especially around incentivization for costs and reimbursement and revenue generation. This is probably the only way we can really try and control healthcare costs, especially within, a capitalist world. I think we all need to be realistic that healthcare is a business as well. And unless there are specific guidelines or thresholds that healthcare organizations can work upon and can mandate providers of services that they work with, manufacturers of healthcare technologies, then unless we do this, it's going to be difficult to actually unlock the full potential of generating value and reducing outcomes. And no single solution is the answer. Healthcare organizations need to be flexible to take on financial risk in exchange for flexibility and incentives, whether that's in terms of them purchasing directly from manufacturers or if it's about them getting paid from payers. And this, applies to not just, very, healthcare, let's say healthcare models that are focused on private healthcare like we have in the US, to those that are very much single payer systems like we have in the UK and France and in many countries in Europe. So policymakers really need to help, the healthcare system develop frameworks that encourage competition, incentivize innovation, but also create some sort of standardization around how this is all going to be implemented. I think government payers will play a key role in catalyzing, these new reimbursement approaches. Patients must also be empowered and educated to make some of these value-conscious decisions around their care options. We have some guidance now in the UK within the National Health Service around, a push for shared decision making. And everything requires a lot of persistence and collaboration between healthcare stakeholders, from start to finish. And it's not just about focusing on, high cost therapies and high cost interventions and saving there, but there are large savings that can also be provided around at the population level just by educational programs. But this is where it's really important to start, focusing a lot more on the economics and the value that these interventions can generate. And that means, a large focus on modeling informed by high quality data, some of it that can be collected and shared using conventional means, and some of it can be used, gathered and shared using, new and advanced technologies like blockchain. But by focusing on the economics and incentives and aligning this with health, I think that's going to be really important to build better functioning healthcare systems in the future. Obviously, this a lot of this conference is focusing around blockchain and the technology and the benefits that this can provide. I think it's really interesting how this technology can really help us, but obviously it needs to be utilized in the right way. But in terms of creating a foundation, I think it's really interesting the fact that, once you have tamper-proof data, and once data is collected and stored, you can make decisions without worrying about, whether this data has been trustworthy or tampered with at all. So it helps us create this foundation for some of these, health economic decisions. Blockchain can really help us with the interoperability aspects as well, around this data, making sure that each stakeholder, can access the right data. And there's the right permissions being able to be applied to some of this data sharing, especially scalability as well. We're having a lot of improvements now within the technology, so there's no real concerns around scalability anymore as we had seen in the past. And in terms of, regulations, we see that, there are a lot of enterprise level solutions can support privacy, and that really are compliant with things like HIPAA and GDPR within Europe. So just to really sum up, the things that we've been the things that I've been discussing today, I think it's really important to really understand how, value-based approaches within healthcare are really, really critical. It's all about looking at the holistic approach as well, looking at sustainability of not just procurement, but also looking at long-term results, long-term quality of life, focusing on promoting innovation within healthcare. We don't want to just reduce expenditure on healthcare technologies, drugs and devices, and stunt innovation. What we want to do is reward quality and reward efficiency and reward good efficacy. So manufacturers are encouraged to innovate. And it's not just about cost savings, it's about rewarding what is good and paying more for what is good and paying less for what is not good. And I think just by focusing on that and starting to think in that way, Healthcare systems around the world will benefit from this. So thank you for listening to my talk. I hope it was very informative. I think there was a lot of information shared. I hope you all benefit from this. There's no right or wrong way to do value-based healthcare. I think it's about starting, measuring, and improving. So thank you.